From the very beginning of the Bible, from the first chapter of the first book of the Bible, from Genesis chapter 1, we hear God created mankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. That's a very important phrase. It means that male alone is not man. Female alone is not man. Male and female are created in the image of God. In today's politically correct environment, we get that fuzzy sometimes. It takes man and woman to be man. The race created by God, in the image of God, in the likeness of God. We are made in the image of God. We are made to share divinity with God. We were made like Adam and Eve to live forever with God, sharing eternal life with him. This is the plan of salvation that God has always had. Now, we know Adam and Eve rebelled, but the plan was to live in his image, in his divinity, in his eternal life. The Jews knew this well. The Pharisees understood this very well. Every Jew knew this. The prophets foretold the coming of the Messiah. But when Jesus became man, when God became man in his Son, Jesus, the Jewish religious leaders, the high priest and the Pharisees, refused to accept the prophecy. They refused to see Jesus as the prophesied Messiah, the Son of God. Nothing Jesus said or did could persuade them, could change their stubbornness. Instead, they plotted to kill him. Even after hearing his authority, his knowledge, and seeing his miracles. It was not unusual in Jesus' time for kings and emperors to claim to be divine. The Roman Emperor Caesar claimed to be divine, claimed to be the Son of God. Roman coins carried the image of Caesar along with an inscription claiming Caesar's divinity. It was on the coin. No devout Jew would carry one for this reason. Those Jewish leaders who wished to trap and kill Jesus were hypocrites, meaning saying one thing and doing another. Jesus knew their hypocrisy, and when they asked him the question, "Teacher, we know that you are a truthful man, and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. And you are not concerned with anyone's opinion, for you do not regard a person's status." Trap set. "And you're not concerned with anybody's opinion, for you do not regard a person's status. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it lawful to pay the census tax to Caesar or not?" Trap. Jesus knew it. If he answered that the tax should not be paid to Caesar, then Jesus could be accused of being a traitor to Rome, a revolutionary. He could lose his life for statements like that. If, however, he said yes, that the tax should be paid, then he would lose favor with the Jewish people who were following him, who knew that Caesar was not divine and that this was a foreign power dominating them. The Pharisees planned an airtight trap. However, Jesus saw it coming, and he saw their hypocrisy. Knowing their malice, Jesus said, "Why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin that pays the census tax." And then they handed him the Roman coin. The hypocrites had the coin. on them. And he said to them, whose image is this? And whose inscription? The divine inscription. They replied, Caesar's. Remember, this coin did have that inscription, that he was divine. And at that he said to them, then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. They were trapped, not Jesus. And they showed themselves to be hypocrites on many levels. First, every Jew knew that man was created in God's image. Man was God's from creation, with the image and likeness stamped on man. We bear God's likeness. God's own Son was human, also made in the image of God. The coin, on the other hand, belonged not to God, but to the world, and carried the image of a false god. The coin with Caesar's image must be paid to the world. The man stamped with God's image must cling to God. Man belongs to God, not to Caesar, not to the world. Jesus died, ultimately, because the world valued him less than Caesar, the false god. That's what it came down to. The world hated Jesus because he would not worship false gods. And Jesus' example was a threat to the false gods of the world. This is why Jesus was crucified. So what's the lesson for us? Take a look at a dollar bill. You notice whose face is on it? It's George Washington, the first president of the United States. We revere him, we love him. He's an institutional icon representing our government. It's a pretty good representation of what our nation is. How do we pay our taxes? I'm not saying don't pay taxes. I'm saying we use Washington to pay Washington. That's what we do. We give to Washington what belongs to Washington. But what do we give to God? Do we give to God what belongs to God? Are we more just with Washington than we are with God in our lives? We're God's. We belong to him. We were created by God in his image and likeness. God created the world in 6 days. On the seventh day, God rested and invited man to rest with him, not to work, but to be divine, to share divinity with God, to go to Mass and spend time with God, to rest with God. The Lord's day is God's day. It's not our day. God gave Moses the Ten Commandments over 1,000 years before Jesus lived. Ten Commandments, a revelation from God that we still honor in the Catholic faith. And the first commandment was, you shall not have other gods. Do not worship material wealth. Do not worship Washington. And we don't. Do not worship the world. God gave us 6 days to do whatever we need to do. But the seventh day, our Sunday, that belongs to God. It's even called the Lord's Day. Don't miss Mass. I mentioned I just returned from my vacation to Rome. I've been going to Rome for 25 or 30 years. I first went in business, and then later on my kids studied over there, and I went over there for family reasons, then more recently for vacation. And at first I was just like everybody else. You go to Rome, you see the Vatican, St. Peter's, the Sistine Chapel, the Colosseum, the Roman Forum, the ruins. Then you go a layer deeper after a while and you go see the other basilicas and begin to get a feel for the texture of a 3,000-year-old city. And then lately I've been attracted to another dimension of Rome. You know, probably the last 5 to 8 years I've been attracted to something that is it's unique. It's the church of the very first centuries. First century after Jesus, second and third century. That was the time during the persecutions, and then how the church transitioned out of the persecutions into a place where you could actually build churches. Because before, under the persecution, for 300 years, if you build a church, it would be like saying, lion food right here. Come and get your lion food right here. You couldn't have a church with signs out front. So they met in people's houses. And the most beautiful thing today is to be able to go into a parish that has never, in 2,000 years, not been a parish. Can you imagine such a thing? 2,000 years, week in, week out, preacher preaching, saying mass, providing the sacraments. And you can see the frescoes on the wall and the mosaics that have been preserved in some of these ancient places. For example, Peter and Paul gathered in community in a number of houses, but one of them was the house of Pudens. It's about 200 yards behind Mary Major. It was there before Mary Major by about 400 years. The Pudens family produced senators and leaders and Christians when Paul and Peter came. And many of them were martyred. The house was eventually deeded over to the church community, to the bishop, even during the persecutions, and people kept meeting there. And then after the persecutions were over, the house was too small. People were coming out and being openly Christian. It wasn't illegal anymore. And so they knocked off the roof, filled it in with dirt, put another floor on there, and built another basilica on top of the original house, using a house foundation as the foundation for that basilica. And that would last, let's say, 1,000 years. And then sometime in the last 800 to 1,000 years, that was too small. It's old and run down. And so they knocked the roof off that one, repeat the same thing, and then fill it in with dirt and build another basilica on top of that. And everything's fine. People kind of remembering something's down there. Archaeology as a science had not been invented yet. And in about the 1860s, 1870s, archaeology began to be practiced as a science. And somebody said, there's something down there. Remember, the parish had never not been a parish. Do you know what a parish memory is? I run into it all the time here. You guys have a parish memory. It's a valuable thing. Imagine a parish memory that remembers, this is the table that Peter said his first mass on in Rome. They still have a piece of it. They lost a piece of it in a struggle with the Emperor Constantine and the Bishop of Rome when they built St. John Lateran, and they needed that table to be the symbolic table for the altar of St. John Lateran, the Basilica of the Bishop of Rome. Those things connect. And you begin to see what a struggle that must have been. I would hate to be up against the grandmothers of that parish when they decided to go in and move that table and try and take it, and they said, no, you can't have it. A parish with a 2,000-year life cycle. Not cycle, life. And they've never not had Mass on Sunday. They have never not baptized in that church. Generation after generation, that parish has a tradition. And when you see on the wall the priests, they dress just like I do. Alb, Stole, Chasuble. The Mass, the communion, you begin to realize this is old. We are faithful. We're doing exactly in the year 2014 what they did when Peter and Paul were there in the 50s. Wow. And they kept it going. Nobody gave them money to keep it going. They had something resembling a parish council. They had something resembling a soul of a parish that never ceases to exercise its will, its faith. That's powerful. That's the image of God. And there's about 20 to 25 of those places in Rome. The stamp of God is on those parishes. San Clemente is another one. You go into Santa Susanna, another one. Santa Prisca, Santa Priscilla. And never not been a parish. Hearing the same gospel for 2,000 years and teaching the importance of having the image of God stamped on us and inviting everyone to be faithful parishioners, doggedly faithful, fiercely faithful to their church and to their parish. We've got good examples behind us. We didn't just pop up in 1957. We're the expression of the universal church, alive and vivid, stamped with the image of God.